Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam.
This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
What a wild Wednesday it was in fantasy baseball. We had aces all across the league on the mound. We had pitching prospects. We also had the Tigers advance to 4-2. Joe Jimenez has saved each of those games. He leads the league in saves. Jacoby Jones hit another home run and is tied for the league lead with three homers. The Detroit Tigers, gentlemen. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today on a Thursday, July 30th. Frank Stanfill alongside Scott White and Chris Towers. Guys, it's 2020. I basically learned to expect the unexpected. Go Tigers!
Yeah, I mean, I think we all know how this story ends, don't we?
They lose every game for the rest of the season?
No, the Braves are going to trade for Joe Jimenez. Because this is exactly what happened last year. Shane Green led the league in saves, I think, through like the end of May. Yeah. I want to say he had 20 saves through the first 2 months of the season or something wild.
End of May is the end of the season this year. So that would be interesting.
I'm not expecting that to happen again.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not either. However, as much closer insecurity as we've seen here in the early going, it is probably comforting to know that Jimenez is getting the ball in the ninth every time. There is a safe chance for the Tigers. So I don't know that he's that good, because I think he's struck out like two total, but you know, he has the job, and that says a lot.
Yeah, that's half the battle when it comes to fantasy baseball for some of these closers. And honestly, whenever the Tigers win games, it's probably not going to be by a lot of runs, which should help the case for Joe Jimenez. We'll get back into the Tigers a little bit later on. Today on the show, we're going to jump all around. We've got pitching prospects galore. We're going to do a fantasy potpourri. It's all over. I got aces. We got batted ball data for hitters, some early data to talk about, and your emails, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Guys, let's start off with some of these pitching prospects, because Nate Pearson made his debut today, looked quite good. 5 innings pitched, 2 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. Christian Javier was on the mound for the Astros, also looked great. Jesus Luzardo in relief kind of fell apart his final inning there that he was pitching, but for the most part, also looked very good. And then we had Dustin May, Justin Dunn, who, like, about an hour ago, I found out was making his major league debut. We could talk about that. And Zach Plesac, who's not
really... Well, his 2020 debut, not his major league debut.
He made 2020 debut starts, I think, last year.
Yeah.
Zach Plesac, who is not really a prospect, but he's 25 years old, so we'll throw him in the mix. Scott, who do you want to start off with? Where do you want to start? I assume it's with Nate Pearson.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, though Nate Pearson kind of just did what I think everybody was hoping he'd do. I guess I was a little surprised he got to go 5 innings his first time through, guy making his major league debut in a year where we've seen a lot of pitchers get pulled pretty early from their first start. So that was good. He threw 75 pitches, 14 swinging strikes on them, as you mentioned, only allowed 2 hits. I mean, he was as advertised. No, I don't even think his fastball was at the best it could possibly be, too. He hit 98 a few times. It averaged 96. I think the I don't think that was even his best fastball necessarily. So
no,
I mean, it's obvious he's somebody you need to roster. And I think he got kind of upstaged today, frankly, because it was a crazy day for pitching. It was just one jaw-dropping line after another, and his looks pretty tame compared to some of them.
Yeah, and this is a bit of what do you got, Chris?
I will say on Nate Pearson, you know, this is something we saw in his last tune-up start, and it's something we saw this time. Very inconsistent with his fastball velocity. You know, if you look at the pitch by pitch, he'll go from like 98, 96, 95, 96, 94. Like it is weird to see a pitcher that inconsistent with the fastball, but obviously, you know, when you're touching 98, 99, you know, it shows you what the upside is. And there was talk of some mechanical adjustments he needed to make after his final tune-up start. Clearly he put in a lot of work to prove that he was major league ready in that time. But there's still some, it looks like there's still some work to be done, but the fact that he was this effective, even against a Nationals lineup that I think we can just fairly say is not good after the first two hitters.
Well, they're going to get Soto back here soon, hopefully.
Yeah. No, right now. I mean, like,
yeah,
it's going to
get
better.
Nobody outside of the top two has an OPS above 800, except for Victor Robles, who's batting ninth and went 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts today.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you cite the inconsistency of Nate Pearson's fastball, because that's kind of the defining characteristic for the other guy who made his first major league start today, Christian Javier.
Mm-hmm.
If we're ready to pivot to him.
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, let's just hit all of these prospects. He was great. 5 2/3 innings pitched, 1 earned run. And to me, Scott, the biggest takeaway is not just the 8 strikeouts against a great Dodgers lineup. Entering this start, they had the lowest strikeout percentage in baseball. They were striking out around 14% of the time as a team. He struck out 8 Dodgers in his debut. 1 walk. That was the biggest takeaway for Javier for me, Scott, because we spoke about him yesterday and we mentioned the walk rate has been an issue for him. Just 1 walk in his debut.
He immediately becomes the most interesting pitcher in baseball. How's that for a hot take?
He was
good enough that, you know, he's going to keep getting chances, and you know, he's going to get like legitimate starter chances, not this 3 2/3 inning thing we keep seeing for Dustin May. Like he was such an interesting prospect because like nobody outperformed him in the minors.
Yeah, the numbers last year, 170 strikeouts and what, 115 innings?
Yeah.
113. Yeah. 1.74 ERA, 0.97 whip. Now he did walk a lot of guys. His walk rate was actually higher than his hit rate. He was just unhittable. And yet, if you watch the game, if you just look at the StatCast data, like the stuff doesn't really jump out at you. He had 10 swinging strikes, I think, on to get those 8 strikeouts. It's not a bad rate, but it's not.
Yeah.
And like, he hides the ball really well. He varies his fastball so that it functions more like 3 pitches than 1. He has like a show me breaking ball and changeup, but they're not really the sort of pitches that would elevate a player's prospect stock. It's just a really weird profile. I said on the show yesterday, it kind of reminds me of Freddy Peralta, but I think Freddy Peralta had like a really impressive debut too, after putting up some great minor league numbers. So like, this is not an open and shut case with Christian Javier. I don't see how you look at those minor league numbers last year, look at his starting debut here, particularly pitching for the Astros, all the success they have with pitchers, and like say no thanks. But I just don't know where it's going to go from here. I could see it being a gimmick and it falling apart with increased exposure, or I could see him being just a total stud.
Well, one thing I will point out in the Freddy Peralta comp specifically, Javier did throw 35 pitches that weren't fastballs.
Mm-hmm.
And tonight, and that might be more than Freddy Peralta's thrown as an entire major league career.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
So although Peralta did develop a slider this offseason, so we'll we'll see what happens with him. He wasn't very good in his first start, though.
Freddy Peralta has typically been like 75-80% fastball usage, and tonight 47 of Javier's 82 pitches were fastballs. He doesn't throw terribly hard, like 92, 93 miles per hour. He maxed out at 95 a few times in that game. Guys, email of the day. I'm just going to get this out of the way right now. This one comes from Frank in Queens. Would you guys drop one of Brady Singer, Corbin Burns, Nathan Eovaldi, or Adrian Hauser for Christian Javier?
I got to look at those names again.
Singer, Burns, Eovaldi, Hauser.
Eovaldi would be an easy call for me. I'd debate on the other three, a debate. There'd be a little bit of a debate. I like the upside of them a lot more, but I'd drop Eovaldi for him.
I think Frank and I both like Eovaldi quite a bit more than Scott, so I think it's probably a similar mixture of upside and certainty. Not a lot of certainty with either of them, decent upside with both.
Well, since he pitched tonight, Eovaldi, you know, he was okay. 8 hits in 5 innings, only 2 earned runs. Not a lot of strikeouts, not a lot of swings and misses. Basically the story of his entire career. What hope I had for him coming in was supposedly he developed this new breaking ball. Hasn't really shown it much the first couple starts. You can count on one hand, or it's a single digit number, the number of times he's thrown it. So, I'm not seeing anything different here for Eovaldi. If there is something different, it's worth pointing out, but I'm not seeing it.
All right, Scott. So you would drop Eovaldi for Javier and Chris.
I think that's reasonable.
You would do the same. Chris, how much fab would you spend on Christian Javier if he's available in your league?
I've got to assume Zach Plesac is available in quite a few leagues, and he would be the guy. I mean, we haven't talked about his start yet specifically, but he was the guy today who looks like the must-add.
Well, what if I told you, Chris, that Christian Javier is 17% rostered on CBS Sports?
And he is RP eligible, right?
And Zach Plesac is 58% owned.
Yeah, this happened to me yesterday. I wrote the waiver wire column for Wednesday morning, and I wrote it Tuesday night after Aaron Civale's incredible start. And I wrote like 400 words on Aaron Civale and then went to his player page and realized he was 80% rostered in CBSSports.com leagues. So
yeah,
I had to delete a lot of stuff and pivot to writing about Christian Javier. So I guess that worked out okay. If Plesac's available, he's the priority. I think he might be the priority for all ads this week right now.
If Nate Pearson's available, I go Pearson over Plesac. I don't know if you were counting
him. That's probably fair.
But otherwise, I mean, it's kind of what I said about Javier. I don't know how you look at the line Plesac had today. 8 innings, 3 hits, no walks, 11 strikeouts, 20 swinging strikes on his 98 pitches. The slider and changeup were both amazing. I don't know where this came from because he had a 9.5 swinging strike rate as a rookie last year. Didn't miss many bats.
This is what the Indians do, man.
It certainly seems that way. Now, it's worth mentioning Plesac did have, before getting called up in 10 minor league starts, he had a 170 ERA, 0.8 whip. Still not like crazy bat missing ability down there. Yeah. It was better than in the majors. Him and Civale on back-to-back days pulling the swinging strike trick. I don't know how much of it is the Indians' ability to develop pitchers, which is sterling. I mean, they probably have a better track record with that than even like the Astros and Rays, as much credit as we give those two organizations. Indians might be the best of all of them at this.
Certainly when it comes to developing their guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Like all of them, like, Kluber wasn't supposed to be as big of a deal as he is. Clevinger wasn't. Bieber wasn't. Carrasco, who actually came up in the Phillies organization, they kind of fixed him. They kind of fixed Trevor Bauer.
I mean, ironically, Bauer, the guy who does the most work on his own and kind of bristled at some of the stuff that the Indians suggested to him very publicly, probably their least successful when you consider the expectations and what he actually produced.
So surprise. Trevor Bauer thinks he knows more than everybody else. Pretty good in his first start. Can't deny that.
I mean,
to finish the thought on Plesac, I don't know what this means yet. I don't know how much of that is the White Sox lineup and them having a lot of swing and miss guys in there.
Yeah, a bit of
but it's such an overwhelmingly good stat line that even though I'm not really a PoliSat guy, there's not enough evidence of this for me to fully buy into it. You just have to pick him up and see where it goes. You just have to.
The last thing I'll add on PoliSat was that he threw 32 sliders in Wednesday night's start against the White Sox. And last year, he threw that pitch just 19% of the time. So 32 of his 98 pitches could be an improved pitch for him. I think we just have to wait and see. You should go out there and add him, but I don't want to overreact too much because now this is three starts in a row with Savale. Adam Plutko had 17 swinging strikes against the White Sox yesterday, and then Plesak had 20 tonight. So you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. Chris, just rank Pearson, Javier, Dustin May, who was 3 1/3 innings pitched, one earned run, three strikeouts, more like Dustin Meh. Pearson, Javier, May, and Plesak. How would you rank those four?
It's interesting. For as much as we raved about Dustin Pearson in his debut last week.
Dustin May.
Sorry. I think I'd go Pearson, Plesak, Javier, May.
I like that order. I'm with you. Jesus Luzardo, the last prospect that I want to mention. I was worried that this might turn out to be a lost season. I clearly was overreacting. He had 16 swinging strikes in relief today on 67 pitches against the Colorado Rockies. Scott, it looks like the next time through the rotation, he will likely be in the rotation. That's Luzardo.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. In 67 pitches, that's decent. That's pretty good for how little he's gotten to pitch. Mike Soroka, I think, threw 69 pitches in his season debut. So Luzardo, you know, basically took that turn, the Mike Soroka first turn. He should be somebody you're getting in your lineup if he is in the rotation for this next turn. It's no guarantee he goes five innings, but it's certainly within reach for him. And the stuff is clearly there, judging by that swinging strike total.
You know, we've had some big injuries to starting pitchers to start the season, Justin Verlander, Corey Kluber, but I will say there's been no shortage of starting pitcher ads. Ross Stripling, Nate Pearson, Garrett Richards, Corbin Burns, Brady Singer, Tyler Chatwood, Christian Javier, Zach Plesak, Griffin Canning, Steven Matz. Look, those guys are not Verlander and Kluber, I get it, but they could be serviceable here in the meantime. And then even Adam Wainwright, Michael Wacha, and John Lester, they have great matchups next week. Wainwright gets the Tigers, Wacha gets the Marlins, and Lester gets the Royals. Of course, I assume all of those things are pending, you know, based on the way that the MLB season has gone thus far. All right, we had a new segment that started yesterday, and I found out before the show that Chris is not a huge fan of it. So naturally, we will start this off, and we will go to Chris with our Oh My Goodness Gracious Player of the Night.
Oh my goodness gracious!
Who you got, Chris?
Hate it. So I'm going to go. All right. First, the Giants have a player named Chadwick Trump. So, oh my goodness gracious, add that name.
Sounds like a character from Game of Thrones.
And this is probably a pretty boring call because he's arguably the best pitcher in baseball. Holy crap, Jacob DeGrom. Can you hit the button for the oh my goodness?
Oh my goodness gracious.
Are you guys aware that Jacob DeGrom averaged 99 miles per hour with his fastball tonight?
Yeah, I had a Mets fan, a friend of mine, texting me that he was consistently hitting 101 in the first inning of the
starts.
Yeah. Insane.
What if he's better? Like, what if Jacob DeGrom, like, his velocity has gone up. You know, I think this is probably like the third straight season that his velocity has gone up. He seems to just keep throwing harder every year. But last year he was at 97.9 miles per hour with his fastball, or 96.9, excuse me, 98.2 in the opener, and then 98.9 tonight. Holy crap.
Holy crap. Jacob DeGrom is hashtag good against the Boston Red Sox at home in Citi Field. Six innings pitched, three hits, two earned runs, one walk, four strikeouts, 12 swinging strikes on 88 pitches. His slider averaged 93.9 miles. Just take it away, Susan.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah. Jacob DeGrom, pretty good. Scott, who do you got?
Now, what's funny about that is compared to some of the other stat lines for pitchers tonight, DeGrom's is pretty lame too. Four strikeouts and six innings. Look, come on.
Jacob DeGrom didn't get to go against the Nationals or White Sox. All right. I mean, the Red Sox lineup has been pretty awful too, but still.
The point of this segment is to highlight something good, right? Not bad.
It can be either way. I think it could be either way because you could be like, oh my God, that guy stinks. Or, oh my God,
okay,
that player's great.
Let me look at the notes here and see what I know we're already going to talk about. I got one here. I got one. I just want to make sure. Okay, I'm going to go with Frankie Montas because this got a my goodness gracious from me twice over. So Frankie Montas has been okay so far. Both of his starts have been fine. He went five innings today. I think gave up two earned runs. Not a lot of strikeouts, but whatever. No reason for alarm, right? What is the whole narrative with Frankie Montas? He added a splitter to his arsenal. It became his best swing and miss pitch. It made him a better strikeout pitcher, a good ground ball pitcher, and he just took off. What if I told you he's not doing that anymore? He threw a total of five splitters in his first start. He threw a total of nine in this one. It is his least used pitch so far. And it explains why he's not missing a lot of bats. I'm not sure he's going to be good if he keeps doing that. I'm not sure he's going to be more than fringy. He's gotten away with it so far, but we've seen what Frankie Montas without the splitter is. And it's fringy, like I said. So, you know, I'm not dumping him yet, obviously. Maybe he starts throwing it again all of a sudden, but I'm worried. I'm worried about Frankie Montas.
Yeah, I want to find an explanation for it because, you know, this is something that we went through back when we thought Kevin Gausman was good. And the key for him always seemed to be throwing the splitter more. And one issue that he always had was he just hadn't been able to develop the calluses on his hands in the spring that he needed to throw the splitter as much as he wanted to. I have no idea if that's the case with Frankie Montas, but that's the one place my mind went. But yeah, it's bad that he's not throwing the splitter because the rest of his pitches, even last year, they only really worked because of the splitter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not ideal, but it is a situation to monitor here early on in the season for Frankie Montas. Someone that I'm going to highlight here is Brandon Woodruff, which I found really interesting in his, not just his stat line, but the underlying numbers, his pitch usage. On Wednesday night, 6 1/3, one hit, zero earned runs, zero walks, 10 strikeouts. Mind you, it comes against the Pittsburgh Pirates, 20 swinging strikes on 92 pitches. His fastball velocity, and he is someone who uses the fastball a lot, is actually up this season. He's been averaging 97 miles per hour on his fastball, and he threw 23 changeups Wednesday night. Eight of his 20 swinging strikes came on that changeup. Last year, he only used his changeup 14% of the time. There was only one start that he made where he threw more than 23 changeups last season. So he has a solid slider. He obviously uses the fastball a lot. That's his pitch. But I think if this changeup is a legitimate second or third pitch for him, then Brandon Woodruff, I mean, could potentially be better than we all thought because he was a mid-round starting pitcher. He was, you know, a top 25 guy. But
yeah.
This addition of a changeup could be huge for him.
He basically dominated just with his fastball last year. His secondary pitches were good enough to keep hitters off the fastball, but that's basically the only purpose they served. If he has a good one now, and it's against the Pirates, so we don't know, but 20 swinging strikes is more than he had in any of his starts last year in a breakout season. So it's, I'd be feeling good if I had Brandon Woodruff on my roster right now. I would also feel good if I had Sonny Gray, who now in two starts has allowed four hits with 20 strikeouts and 12 and 2/3 innings.
Just three walks as well.
Or if I had Lance Lynn, who in his two starts has allowed three hits total with 17 strikeouts and 12 innings. Both of them are doing what they did last year, unlike Frankie Montas there. Lynn's emphasizing the cutter like he did last year. Gray maximizing that slider. You know, they neither one had the sort of track record that inspired much confidence as good as they were last year. They kind of fell to the third tier of starting pitcher picks, and they are looking like they are going to be, you know, must start every week type pitchers for you. Cy Young contenders potentially.
Yeah, let's just continue to run down the list of, you know, some of the aces that were on the mound today and just kind of give some general thoughts here quickly. Lucas Giolito, a much-needed bounce back, six innings, no runs allowed, two walks, six strikeouts, 14 swinging strikes on 85 pitches. The fastball velocity was down about a half tick. 81 of his 85 pitches were just the fastball and changeup. So, you know, he had a serviceable slider last year. I wonder if that's by design, but I thought that this was a great bounce back performance for Lucas Giolito and one that we needed to see. Charlie Morton. I'm going to take the glass half full approach as the, you know, Charlie Morton advocate. Well, both Chris and I, all of us. I mean, we dubbed this the Charlie Morton podcast. This is the podcast.
I mean, you guys, I think were especially high on him.
Like, yeah, probably
one of your top
10. Right?
Uh-oh, Scott's backtracking.
Like a rat off a sinking ship. Wow.
Charlie Morton on Wednesday night against the Braves, two earned runs allowed over five innings, seven strikeouts, which is great, 13 swinging strikes on 80 pitches. I like that. 92.7 miles per hour on the fastball velocity. Yeah. Last year, he was at 94. Last week, in his first start, he was at 91.8. So he was up about a tick here, Chris. That's my glass half full. Seven strikeouts is good. He allowed a home run to Freddie Freeman, one of the best hitters in baseball. You can't really blame him for that. I thought specifically for these two guys, Giolito and Morton, very solid bounce back games here.
Yeah, I mean, Morton, I still have confidence that he can be good, even if he's pitching at that level. Obviously, you'd rather it's better to throw hard than to not throw hard. The velocity did kind of leave him as the start went on. You know, early on in the start, through the first couple innings, he was like more like 93 and a half, 94. And then as the start went on, it started to dip. So that's a little bit concerning. With Giolito, I was actually watching that game, and once he got pulled from the game, you know, it was a good outing, tough matchup. Cleveland is actually a pretty tough matchup. So they talked about how he only threw four sliders and curveballs. And that was by design. Last time he pitched in Cleveland, he had a very similar approach. It was all fastballs and changeups. And he actually threw the changeup about 2 miles per hour slower tonight than he did on average last season. Again, another thing that was by design. He, you know, has been, I guess, working on being able to manipulate that pitch a little better. And, you know, so what that tells me is that it's not, you know, sometimes when a pitcher just abandons a pitch like Frankie Montas, it's like, what's going on there? Has he lost the feel for the pitch? With Giolito in particular, it does sound like this was just part of the game plan against this specific opponent. And look, it worked. You can't argue with the results. So I'm not concerned about it.
I don't have any concerns about Giolito. I mean, the changeup was more the key to his breakthrough and the fastball velocity last year. And both of them were fine. I mean, the changeup still got a ton of whiffs, just like it did in the first start. He's fine. Like, the drop in velocity for Morton is concerning. I don't think it's going to break him necessarily, like you were saying, Chris, because the key to his breakthrough with the Astros was as much pitch selection as anything else. And, yeah, you know, his curveball's still getting the whiffs. And that was not a pitcher he featured early in his career like he does now. There might be enough velocity there on the fastball for him to still be a steady, reliable, at times excellent starter for you. I am lowering him some. Two starts in, velocity's down by a few miles per hour. It adds an element of the unknown that I'd rather not deal with for a pitcher in that class. So I'd rather have Sonny Gray than him at this point. I'm not sure I'd move Morton all the way down behind Lance Lynn yet. We'll see. It is encouraging that his velocity went up a little. It's possible he just isn't built up enough yet to throw maximum velocity. But it wasn't. It was more encouraging than not, Morton's start today.
Yeah.
Yeah,
go ahead, Chris.
No, this is on a different pitcher, so we'll, if you had something to add on Morton.
I was just going to say, as you know, the Morton truther, I agree with Scott that it's two starts in. I would rather have Sonny Gray than Charlie Morton, just based on what I've seen.
Yeah, but that's also, I think, as much about Sonny Gray, just looking absolutely brilliant so far. And
yeah,
you know, the improvements that he made last season looking real. You know, I think he learned a lot from the time with the Yankees and has become a better pitcher because of it. And, you know, the Reds did bring in Kyle Boddy from Driveline Baseball to, I think he's like the pitching coordinator for the organization as a whole. And, you know, it might just be that they're just, they figured out how to get the most out of him. But Sonny Gray was also really, 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 really good last year. In a way that, I mean, seemingly outside of this podcast, wasn't really appreciated as much as it probably should have been, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, lots of people like Sonny Gray. He was like the 20th pitcher in ADP or whatever. But like, you know, he was better than his draft position.
Well, what did you want to add, Chris? Did you want to add something on Sonny Gray or was it?
Brandon Woodruff. So he did throw his changeup a lot tonight. I do wonder if that might have been matchup dependent because the Pirates had a ton of left-handed hitters in the lineup and he only threw two changeups to righties tonight. One thing I will say, however, was he did use his slider as often as he used his four-seam fastball against righties. And so if this is a situation where Brandon Woodruff is more willing to use those two secondary pitches, then it doesn't really matter for me whether it's okay, he's going to throw the changeup a lot more every start. It's more, my thing with him is it's really hard to succeed being as fastball heavy as he was last season. He was like 65% fastballs. You know, you don't see a lot of pitchers in that range these days. And so if he's more willing to trust the changeup against lefties and the slider against righties, it does make him a lot more interesting, I think.
Yeah, it's not impossible. I mean, Lance Lynn kind of defies the odds, but he's like the poster child for fastball usage. But again, if the changeup is working and the slider as well, then Woodruff might be better than any of us thought heading into the season. I will note that the one start last year that he threw more than 23 changeups was also against the Pittsburgh Pirates. So that might be a matchup-dependent thing as well. Some news and notes. Mike Moustakas and Nick Senzel returned on Wednesday night, which means Tyler Stevenson, the catcher prospect we spoke about earlier in the week, was optioned back to their alternate site, and whole squad ready. Wow, Cincinnati Reds, everyone back on the field. We had a Castellanos grand slam, Moustakas homered, Senzel homered. When everyone is healthy, I mean, the Reds are going to be one of the worst matchups for starting pitchers. They completely bombed Kyle Hendricks, who had a great first start against the Milwaukee Brewers. Threw a complete game in his first start and then came back here and got rocked. Nationals manager Davey Martinez said Wednesday that the team is hoping that Juan Soto will be back on Saturday, which doesn't really make sense because they're not playing this weekend, but that means you could have him back for next week in your fantasy lineups.
Kind of a disaster.
Yeah,
because apparently he actually tested negative
a bunch of times.
Multiple times early in the week. It was unclear whether it was within MLB's protocol. Apparently, he has been cleared by MLB for more than a day now. And he's waiting for the Washington, D.C. clearance.
Yes.
And so we could have had Juan Soto back this week.
Right.
And instead, he misses the first two weeks of the season.
Yes.
It could have been worse.
We're still waiting for the Washington, D.C. clearance.
Yes.
By the way, aren't we?
Yes. As of now, recording this Wednesday night. So let's see what happens.
Not jerks about that.
Cross your fingers. Hopefully we can get him in for the next scoring period. Rangers manager Chris Woodward expressed concern about how Willie Calhoun has responded to the fractured jaw he suffered back in spring training. Remember, he got hit in the face by Julio Urias, a 95-mile-per-hour fastball. He had this to say: I trust Willie. He has no fear, but I want to make sure he's okay. It's traumatic to get hit in the face, so I'm obviously keeping that in mind. I want to get him going. I want to make sure he's a big part of our offense, but also don't want to put him in a vulnerable position where it creates an issue. He is, I believe, 0-10 to start the season, and he did not have a great summer camp by all accounts, everything that I've read. We've had some questions. I mean, Scott, would you consider dropping Willie Calhoun, let's say, for Aaron Hicks, who homered on Wednesday and is still available in over 50% of CBS sports leagues?
No. I mean, it's not like Hicks is off to a blistering start here. Glad he homered. I'm glad he's playing. I would still trust in the upside of Willie Calhoun over that, though, especially since I don't think Hicks is looking like a hot ticket right now. I'm trying to think of who is hitter-wise, and I feel like the pitchers have gotten most of the traction so far.
We mentioned Cespedes yesterday. He homered again on Wednesday night against the Red Sox.
His numbers are still bad other than those two home runs.
Struck out three times
today.
I mean, Trent Grisham,
Swanson, I guess.
Trent Grisham's been really good so far. He's hitting 300 with an OPS over 1,000, had a home run today, two more hits. Game in progress.
Would you drop Willie Calhoun for Trent Grisham, Chris?
Man, Trent Grisham was really productive in the minors last year. He was one of the few players, I think it was to have 25 homers and 15 steals in the minors last season. So he's hitting at the top of a good lineup. I think I would consider it at least.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to remember that anybody whose stat line looks good, just
sure
what kind of sample we're talking about. Trent Grisham has 6 hits this year. 6 is a lot for what, 5 games, 6 games?
He just homered in Oracle, which is no easy feat to accomplish.
Yeah, but that's like, you know, look at Freddie Freeman's stat line yesterday when he struck out 4 times versus today when he had 4 hits.
He was hitting Trent Grisham was hitting 235 before today.
Right. So, you know, if it was just Willie Calhoun didn't get hit in the face, his manager's not talking about it, and he's off to this kind of start, I would not think anything of it at all, and I'd stick with Willie Calhoun. But it does raise a little bit of alarm. I think I'd just stick with Calhoun. I'm not ready to give up on that.
How about even for Will Myers? Scott, Will Myers is 47% owned, which seems too low.
Yeah, it does seem too low. And he's off to a good start. He's walked a ton. I don't
struck out a ton too.
Yeah, I know who Will Myers is. And what Will Myers is basically valuable in 5x5 leagues where you can start more than 3 outfielders. And, you know, he's definitely interesting there as a guy who contributes some power and speed. But, you know, the full package still isn't studly enough that you're starting him in every fantasy league. And I think Willie Calhoun's case, it is. So I can understand starting Will Myers over Willie Calhoun right now until we see signs of Calhoun getting back on track. But It's difficult in this season it being about a third of the length of the average season because there's a feeling like you can't stick with slow starters as long as usual. I think maybe there's some truth to that, but I don't want to – like it's still – the past week's stats are generally not predictive of the upcoming week's stats.
They're not. When you separate them from what an actual player's actual skill set, like they tell you basically nothing. Like,
right.
The hot hand doesn't really exist.
So I kind of think it does in a DFS sense, but from week to week, the fantasy sense.
It's a different conversation, but there's been a lot of research that suggests that if it does exist, it's very, very, only very slightly predictable.
Yeah, I would say it's predictable when you're facing the Baltimore Orioles pitching staff.
As somebody who puts together, you know, picks sleeper hitters for every week, I've had much more success at that looking at the matchups for the upcoming week than looking at what the player's been doing recently. That's just not a good way to go about it. And that process shouldn't change no matter how short the season is. Really what should concern you is if there appear to be underlying skill changes. And I don't think there's much of anything right now that could suggest that for a hitter.
Well, Scott, we got a segment coming up.
Okay.
That might disagree.
Yeah. Some foreshadowing there from Chris. Last couple of news items. This is from Andrew Baggerly, who covers the Giants for The Athletic. He writes that it is hard to imagine Joey Bart will endure too much of a wait in the alternate training site for the San Francisco Giants before being promoted to the majors. So keep that in mind into catcher leagues, maybe even one catcher leagues. Just remember that. Giants manager Gabe Kapler, love that guy, said Wednesday that he expects Brandon Belt and Evan Longoria to be activated Thursday. We have our first reverse opt-out. Nick Markakis announced Wednesday that he is joining the Braves. I would guess that ends Matt Adams, who has been DHing quite consistently for the Braves. I don't really think it will affect anybody else all too much, Scott? Markakis coming back?
Yeah, I haven't thought about Adams. I don't expect Markakis to have a huge role. He might start a couple times a week, but this doesn't seem like a game changer in fantasy. Just kind of interesting because I didn't even know players could opt back in.
I believe the rule was you can't. So I don't know what's going on there. Like, I'm pretty sure that was the rule, that you could not come back once you opted out.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that we've seen MLB kind of change their rules midseason so far, and I doubt it will be the last as well. Masahiro Tanaka, who was dealing with a concussion, will make his season debut on Saturday against the Red Sox, which is terrible because in 3 starts against the Sox last season, he allowed 22 earned runs in 8 innings pitched. That's not great.
I mean, if you believe in the hot hand, the Red Sox stink right now.
I'll fire up the Red Sox against Tanaka on Saturday. The Indians placed Roberto Perez on the 10-day injured list with a sore right shoulder. Bo Taylor was in the lineup Wednesday. Does not matter for fantasy. And Major League Baseball has suspended Joe Kelly 8 games in a 60-game season for his action during Tuesday's game against the Houston Astros, where, of course, he threw up around, it was Alex Bregman's head, right? And then he was barking at Carlos Correa, and the benches cleared or whatever.
Barking is, I don't know what he was doing.
He was making faces.
He was demonstrating some very childish behavior, I thought. I wonder how much of the suspension was the seemingly intentional beaning and how much was his antics afterward.
Because he's also been suspended at least once, and I think twice, for throwing at guys before. So okay, I think it was,
so maybe there's a history
too. A perfect combination of Joe Kelly kind of being a, you know, a little bit of a you know, like you said, childish.
a tool, yeah. A clown.
A bit of a track record there.
Yeah, so. I'm gonna add him to the list of clowns in the MLB, along with Trevor Bauer, of course. All right, guys, we'll take a quick break here. Quickly promote that you should be signed up for our newsletters, cbssports.com/newsletters. You can sign up for the fantasy baseball one, the fantasy football one, and all of our articles get delivered right to your inbox every single day. So, I mean, why wouldn't you do it? It's free and it's easy to use. And make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasybaseballtoday. We have just crossed 1,100 subscribers, so thank you all who have subscribed already, and let's continue to make that number climb. Next milestone, we got 1,500, 2,000. Let's go for 5,000. Let's continue to grow Fantasy Baseball Today. Take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to look at some early season hitter trends. Do they matter?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
Welcome back to Fantasy Baseball Today. Some early season hitter trends. You know, it's interesting. You don't want to read too much into the bad ball data. We're not even a week into the season. But, you know, there are some things that we have takeaways from. And specifically, that Chris has takeaways because he wrote an article on CBSSports.com. Make sure to go check that out. Chris, the ones that really stood out to me were that Trey Turner is not running yet. And, you know, people have been tweeting at me like, what's going on? Trey Turner's not running. You know, Adalberto Mondesi does not have a stolen base yet either. Corey Seager is awesome. Excited about that. Luis Robert
just real good.
Is no joke. And then one that you didn't have in there, but I noticed today, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has a 68% ground ball rate to start the season. And that was something that I wanted to monitor early in the season. So, you know, which one of these four hitter trends is most notable for you a week into the season?
I mean, I'm getting some real Fernando Tatis rookie season vibes from Luis Robert that just, like, yes, the plate discipline is awful, but he's just going to be awesome anyway. But I think what Corey Seager is doing so far is among the more, I think he's been among the more impressive hitters in baseball. He only went 1-for-5 today, although he did hit his first home run of the season on Wednesday night. So, you know, hard to actually complain about that. But he has arguably been one of the most unlucky hitters in baseball, which is a lot to say for a guy with a 320 average and 913 OPS. But before today's game, he had like a 500 expected batting average. Obviously, we're dealing with very small sample sizes. It has tumbled all the way to 492. He had a 68% hard hit rate coming into the season or into this game. He hit, I believe, two more batted balls at 105 miles per hour. Corey Seager is hitting the crap out of the ball. You know, this was something that we talked about was a possibility with him. He's been really good whenever he's been healthy. And, you know, it turns out when you're not coming back from hip and elbow surgery in the same offseason, hitting's a little bit easier.
Yeah.
Still hitting the ball on the ground too much. But you really got to nitpick to find something wrong with what Corey Seager's doing right now. And it's hard to fake this kind of batted ball production. You know, you can fake results, but when you're hitting, you know, two batted balls over 105 miles per hour, like he did today, and you're averaging like 96 miles per hour, you're doing a lot of things right.
Yeah, I know entering Wednesday night's action, he led all of baseball with 13 batted balls of 95 plus mile per hour exit velocity. And then he added obviously two more on Wednesday night. So yeah, Corey Seager is locked in. Scott, outside of Corey Seager, I mean, anything you want to highlight here? Luis Robert has at least one hit in each of his first six games. He stole a base tonight, 11 strikeouts, just one walk, which you don't like to see that. And then of course, Vlad Guerrero hitting the ball on the ground again.
Yeah. The Guerrero thing probably means the most to me because his breakthrough was contingent on that improving. And there's no evidence that it's going to yet. Maybe it still could, but you know, at least at this point, I feel like we'd see him elevating some if it was going to change. So, you know, I'm not hopeful for a Vladimir Guerrero breakthrough coming this year at this point. One you didn't mention that Chris has brought up a few times. I mean, I think it's true that the Eric Hosmer,
yeah,
what he's doing on his batted balls, elevating them with great consistency. After that was a stated goal of his coming in. He said he needed to stop hitting so many ground balls. And has he hit a single ground ball yet?
He has yet to hit a ground ball.
Yeah, yeah. And he's out of the lineup again today for a stomach bug that for some reason only bothers him every other day.
Somebody get this guy Pepto-Bismol or something. Like,
yeah, come on, when he's dude. In the lineup, he's been crushing it. So
yeah, he's hitting the ball extremely hard, elevating. And it's interesting, you know, if you look at 2019 Eric Hosmer versus 2020 Eric Hosmer, like his stance is a little bit different. He seems to be holding his hands a little bit higher this year. He takes a like literally like maybe 3 inches less of a leg kick. He's got that really high leg kick, but now it's like just this much lower. But you know, one thing he's talked about and one thing Christian Yelich talked about with his swing change was, or profile change really, because in both cases it wasn't a swing change. What Christian Yelich has talked about, what Hosmer has talked about, was it's about hitting the ball earlier. It's about getting to the ball earlier when it's a fastball and meeting it out in front when your swing is already on the incline, meeting it on that path. And so it seems like the changes he's made have mostly just been, you know, getting on the ball quicker, getting into the swing quicker. And I mean, there's a reason this dude was starting in the World Baseball Classic over Paul Goldschmidt. he didn't deserve it based on how good they actually were as players. But in terms of talent, there's never been a question that Eric Hosmer is an unbelievably talented player. He just wasn't putting his tools to the best use. And now he seems to be.
Yeah, look, he's not the first player. He won't be the last. I mean, we've talked a lot about this, you know, with Wilson Ramos and some other hitters, you know, over the past couple of months, the past couple of years for you guys as well. So, yeah, look, he's not the first. He's not the last. But definitely encouraging for Eric Hosmer thus far. And the lineup for the Padres looks pretty good. I mean, Grisham's playing well. Tatis, for the most part, has done well. Manny Machado, best player of all time, obviously, hit a home run last night. Yeah. So.
Only one of us picked the Padres to make the playoffs back when we thought only 10 teams were making the playoffs. I guess now we'd all pick the Padres to make the playoffs since 16 teams are, huh?
Let's go Padres. Yeah. All right, guys.
One more real quick.
All right, Chris.
Tyler O'Neill, the thing we've always said was if he just made contact, he could be a star. He has struck out once in 17 plate appearances so far. That is, he has never had a stretch like that in the majors. It's early, but huge raw power, stolen base potential. Keep an eye on Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah, he is a great athlete, and that is putting it lightly.
Super jacked.
Super jacked. He went 0 for 3 Wednesday night, but put the ball in play in all three of his at-bats. Did not strike out. He was batting fifth, so he's moving up the lineup here for the St. Louis Cardinals. Speaking of that game, Scott, Rich Hill made his season debut. Not typical Rich Hill. 5 shutout innings, but only 2 strikeouts, only 3 swinging strikes. Pleasantly surprised by his first start?
I mean, fine with his first start. I encouraged that he was able to go 5 innings. He averaged like 88 on his fastball. He averaged like 89 last year, so I don't think that's cause for concern. I'd like to see a few more swinging strikes than that, but it's not like swinging strikes was responsible for his success. It's not like he has a great swinging strike rate year over year. So that's, I think he's basically Rich Hill, and that's a good thing. And it looks like he's healthy. So I'm treating him probably like a must start as much as I can help it, getting him in my lineup as often as possible going forward. Cause I still think he has that top 10 potential over a 9-week season.
Chris, I know someone you wanted to highlight was Daniel Ponce de Leon on the other side in this game, 3 2/3, 3 earned, 3 walks against the Twins. But 8 strikeouts with 11 swinging strikes in his 85 pitches. Where does he kind of fit in with some of the names that we started off talking about at the top of the show with the Christian Javier's? I would imagine he's behind that group.
Yeah, yeah. I would say even, you know, we are comparing Nathan Eovaldi. I would say he's still behind him as well. But, you know, Ponce de Leon has, you know, pitched in parts of 2 seasons. He's got like a 3.29 ERA and a 1.2 whip and a strikeout per inning. Really good minor league numbers. AAA, he was dominant, you know, well over a strikeout per inning. I think a low 2s ERA. So just someone to keep an eye on. What he's done really well throughout his major league career so far has been limiting hard contact. And, you know, you combine that with what has been an above average strikeout rate. And I think he's certainly more interesting than he gets credit for being in fantasy. Obviously, he'll need to be more efficient than he has been, especially with the walks.
Also in that game, since I don't think it's in the notes, Frank, just want to point out Sergio Romo pitched a scoreless 7th inning for the Twins, and Taylor Rogers did come in, made a season debut, 2 strikeouts and a perfect 9th for his first save. So, you know, I don't think the concern there was ever that Romo was overtaking Rogers. It's just a question of how many saves he's going to steal from Rogers for matchups reasons. And we still don't know the answer to that, but I'm sure Rogers owners are feeling encouraged by what happened today.
Yeah, and we mentioned this last night, Scott. You know, I guess occasionally I'll get one thing right here on the show. I mentioned that, you know, Sergio Romo was already warming up in the 8th inning yesterday, and then the Cardinals scored another run, which made it a save opportunity. So Rocco Baldelli just chose to go with Sergio Romo because he was already warming up in the pen. So yeah, that's what happened
that's
yesterday.
That's our theory anyway, right? Like,
no, I saw confirmation of that. I saw confirmation on that today.
Oh, okay, yeah. Good.
Yeah,
good.
So Taylor Rogers, I would imagine, is still the closer for the Minnesota Twins. Josh Hader picked up his first save of the season in a clean inning. Joe Jimenez mentioned this at the top, 4 saves in the Tigers, 4 wins so far this season. Brandon Workman basically imploded, but he rebounded, pitched an inning, two hits, two walks, an earned run, two strikeouts, barely escaped with the save. With the save here, Scott, in the 6-5 win against the New York Mets. Matt Barnes pitched the inning before, but also allowed a run. I just don't think that there are many names in the Red Sox bullpen, so I think that we're going to have a pretty long leash here with Brandon Workman.
Yeah, I'm not sure how this is going to go for him. He had a historically low batting average against last year, which you could say, oh, he must have pitched well, but at the same time, there's a very good chance that Minnie had some luck too. And he walks a lot of guys. So two hits, two walks in this inning, and it didn't go well for him. But like you said, I think he has quite a long leash.
Jose Leclerc was held out with shoulder tightness earlier in the day. Nick Goody picked up the save for the Texas Rangers, a clean inning with a strikeout. Goody does not throw particularly hard. Career 3.84 ERA, 1.29 whip. This is a situation to monitor. But, you know, Scott, if you have waivers running over the next couple of days and you own Leclerc, would you make it a priority to get Nick Goody on your team?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't pick him up over, like, Nick Birdie, who appears to be the Pirates closer, or Anthony Bass. Goody was really good in 2017. He had one great year, but he's been kind of shaky since then. You mentioned the career line. And we don't know the extent of this injury for Leclerc, who I think has thrown more balls than strikes so far this year in the couple appearances he's made.
Sounds about right.
So, you know, he's shaky anyway. I don't know how this is going to play out. Obviously, Goody looks like he's the front runner here. They also have Rafael Montero, who's currently on the IL, but he should be back in the mix at some point. And we'll see. But Goody, I don't know. Among interesting saves targets, he's pretty far down for me.
One of you guys joined the call here earlier, and you said that Brad Hand is done. Was it you, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't saying that for public consumption, but yeah, his fastball velocity was down yet again today. We hadn't really talked about it in his first two outings because he did have four strikeouts, but yeah, his fastball velocity looks like it's about 2 miles per hour down for the season. He got one swinging strike on 22 pitches today, averaged 91 with his fastball. It's a concern for sure. Yeah, especially with the elbow issues that he had last season. I don't know if he's, you know, kind of intentionally dialing it back or if he just doesn't have it, but it's alarming to see early on.
James Karinchak. Remember the name. The guy is absolutely filthy. The last items that I just want to hit from the bullpen, Daniel Hudson, an inning in 1.2 innings pitch, zeros across the board with three strikeouts. We have expressed some concern over Sean Doolittle the past couple of days, and Hudson has looked very good so far. Ian Kennedy once again pitched in the seventh inning in a tie game, and he allowed the go-ahead, I believe it was a home run. So your guess is as good as mine. The Rays and the Royals. Oh, the Rays, by the way. Oliver Drake pitched in the, the sixth or the seventh inning in a...
Sixth.
Yeah.
Ended up taking the loss. He didn't pitch well. And incidentally, Jose Alvarado followed him and also didn't pitch well. They both gave up a run on a couple hits. They're the only two... I think prior to that, Alvarado had only worked in the ninth inning, but never in a save situation. And of course, Oliver Drake worked the ninth inning a couple times to get those two saves, but it's still totally a committee situation there. I think Oliver Drake and Jose Alvarado are probably the front runners for saves still, regardless of where they worked today. But of course, Nick Anderson is still very much in the mix, and Diego Castillo is there too. So we'll continue to pull our hair out over that situation, I'm sure.
DTA, don't trust anybody when it comes to the Tampa Bay Rays bullpen. FantasyBaseball@CBSi.com will answer some of your questions here. This one's from Stuart. 12-team Roto League with quality starts instead of wins and saves plus holds. I have a stacked pitching staff thanks to some of my keepers. I traded Hyunjin Ryu and Shohei Ohtani for Sonny Gray. Looks pretty good right now. Grade the trade, fellas.
I'm kind of treating Ohtani like he's worthless. I mean, he's technically not worthless, but yeah. In terms of trade making, in terms of trade value in a 12-team league, he might as well be, because I just don't have any expectations for him at this point, except maybe as like a passable DH option. So yeah, this is a good trade, because Ryu to Sonny Gray is an upgrade. I'll give it a minus.
Yeah, the fact that it's a keeper league does change that calculus a little bit, because I would guess the next X number of years, Shohei Ohtani will eventually be better than Sonny Gray, but it, just focusing on 2019, I think that's a coup. Yeah, I think that's an A.
Yeah, 2019, we're going back in time here.
2020.
This one's from Omar. Man,
it's been a weird year.
It's been a weird, weird is not the word, Chris. From Omar, hey, Tommy, Arthur, John, and Polly.
I don't know.
It'd probably be a giveaway. But.
These are Peaky Blinders. Have any of you watched that show?
I have not watched that show.
I've heard good things, but I haven't got around.
I get confused with another show. There's another one with like a Peaky something or other, right?
If there is, I don't know about it. Peaky Blinders is
Twin Peaks. I don't know.
Oh, Twin Peaks. Yeah, that's another one.
There's another one.
Who do you think is a better stash? Who would you rather have? If both are called up between Nick Madrigal and Dylan Carlson, 6x6 roto with OBP and batting average. Scott?
I would rather have Dylan Carlson, because I'm not ready to put a limit on his upside. I need to see some of it first. And I think he's capable of contributing in enough ways that it just might be really, really high. Nick Madrigal, you know, he's not going to hit for power. So probably a better steal source than Carlson if you need that specifically. And obviously there's a position difference there, but I'd rather have Carlson 9 times out of 10.
This next was from Jack. Hey fam, LaStella, Malone, and Edmund.
Yeah, I get that one.
Yep. Tommy's. In a 10 team head to head 6x6 categories league with quality starts and OPS. I've been offered Tommy Pham and Matt Boyd. I'd be giving up Victor Robles, Zach Gallen, and Corbin Burns. Don't love that one. No, what do you think, Gus?
I like Pham more than Robles, and I like... I guess Pham... Yeah, I like Pham more than Robles, but I like Gallen more than Boyd, and I think the gap between Gallen and Boyd is bigger. Especially because Robles is actually on to a pretty good start, and Pham's got the 4 strikeouts. He's been rough otherwise.
Stolen bases.
Four stolen bases.
What did I say?
Four strikeouts.
Man, it's
it's a little late here on the East Coast.
Like I'm not like you guys. You guys are all hopped up on caffeine. I'm trying to go to bed after this.
All right, Scott, do you agree? Which I would rather have?
The fact that it's an OPS as an added category, I think, tips it a little more Pham's direction. But I like Gallen that much more than Boyd.
Robles and Pham are kind of a wild. Yeah, I'd rather have the Robles, Gallen, and Corbin Burnside. All right, guys, that'll do it for Scott and Chris. I'm Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today on our YouTube channel. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.